I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah. And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. I'm Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether, he's the Bruce Wayne to my Batman. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, billionaire for hire.
I'm curious, why did I get Bruce Wayne? Why did you get Batman? What was the deciding factor?
You know, this may sound a little backwards here. Like, I feel like I took Batman by default. I'm not sure if I'm really worthy of Batman, but you seem more of the cut jaw, debonair type of a Bruce Wayne. Not snooty, but you know, you could probably pull off the look.
You know what? Well, that's very kind of you, but I bulk up
a little bit more like Affleck, but you know, it will get you on some testosterone.
I'm going for the Pattinson look. I can do that with my hair.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So that's a little bit. So lay off the TRT. Exactly. We can go with a little bit of a slimmer, sleeker Batman.
I was in college, actually, when I tried to grow my hair out, I didn't have anybody like actually helping me with this. It was coming way down my hair in the front, and it definitely looked like. Not full emo, because I would wear like more like flannels and stuff. But if I wanted to go full emo,
that's kind of emo. It's like grunge pop, like
fair,
punk, you know.
But it was cowboy boots, and my hair kind of had like waves.
I see what you're saying. That type of flannel. I got you.
But on this note too, I was curious if you were going to bring up like anything calf related, because I don't know. Batman, who has bigger calves, Batman or Wesley Sykes?
I don't know. It's been, you know, I just got back in the gym for the first time yesterday after like been going like sporadically. I still haven't hammered out a time.
Sure.
And I'm really sore. I just did like a full like total body multi-joint stuff, just like very basic. Mm-hmm. And it's sore. So I got to find one, a new schedule. So I've lost all my gains. And two, I gotta rework my whole workout. I could go for like 90 minutes every day at the end of work. You know, there was no responsibilities. And now it's like, all right, I gotta be a little bit tighter on things.
It's tough, man. I can't even imagine. Like, I know it's tough in general, like it, but now what you got going on, I don't know.
Adjustment though. You know, it's just like leveling up.
Exactly. Yes. That's why. But don't let yourself turn into goo, because
Goo's back on the horse. You know, he's sending pictures from the gym.
Oh, is he? I hadn't seen those.
He's got a very nice gym, actually.
I guess I'm not on that text thread. But anyways, yes.
It all gets bogged down, you know. Mm. A couple people like myself or Billy start talking shit, and then everything gets washed.
It's impossible. It honestly is.
You know, that's the life of the group text. But anywho, this week, in honor of The Flash releasing last week in theaters, we felt it was only right to rank the best Batman. Yes, you heard right, the Batman to appear on the big screen. That's a little caveat there. But before that, Nick, do you think the R-rated comedy is dead?
No. You know, I did, though, for a long time. We've talked about it because it's just like there was the aughts, right? That's when we got Talladega Nights, right? That's when we got old school.
Oh, yeah, Superbad. And then you had, like, the frat pack there with Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn, and Will Ferrell.
Was Step Brothers in the aughts, or was that, like, late or early teens?
No, I think that's, like, 2008 or so, you know?
Yeah, okay. So I was right.
Bridesmaids was 2011. And then I feel like it dropped off. We had a huge drought right after like Game Night. I think Game Night was a really, really big or decent success. I think it made 100 million or so in the box office. And that's a good movie. I enjoyed that as well. But since then, we haven't really gotten a whole lot. There's Good Boys. And I bring that up now because what is it? No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence is in theaters. And that's kind of getting mixed reaction. I think I'm not sure if anyone who's seen it, you know, because there's some age dynamics there, you know, some of the negative reception around that. I'm not sure if those people have actually seen the movie yet. But yeah, so you saw it. I don't want to take away your Discharge Depot.
No, it's okay.
Later, but
we got plenty else.
What do you think? Was it good? So it's not dead. That's what you're telling me.
That's what I mean. Like, because I feel like, Wes, there's another comedy that we saw not too long ago.
Good Boys.
Good Boys. And which one was that one?
That was with like the eighth graders who go off and they swear a lot. It was like the eighth grade Superbad.
That was a while back. That was like early days of our podcast.
It was.
Yeah, it might have been single.
I'm losing you here.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. You're good.
All right. Sorry about that. So yeah, I want to say I laughed out loud like four times when I was watching this. There may be a little bit more. I don't usually pay attention to that, but I know that's the thing that whenever we're talking podcasts and movies in the DSG, that's laugh out loud moments is what gets brought up a lot.
You need it. And also to make a good R-rated comedy, there's a little nudité, I hear.
Yes, there was. Oh my God. Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence, I got to say, that's impressive. We've seen Will Ferrell, right? To bring those two up in nude scenes in the same sentence is not, is odd, I know. But we've seen him he going streaking in the quad or doing stupid shit. She gets in a fight while.
Okay.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. I was impressed. My jaw was down to the floor the entire time because I just could not believe what I was seeing.
Now, so I was a little hesitant on this movie here because it just seemed kind of weird. Again, the age dynamics, the family being involved, hiring, it felt kind of out of place. But that's what it should be with a raunchy, rated R comedy. I'm sure it has some heart to kind of finish everything off with. I think I'll wait for this to come out on HBO Max or whatever streaming site it goes on. But
if you have a problem with that portion of it, which is the main portion in the trailers and stuff, you're probably not going to like this one a whole lot. But I will say this has heart. You are right about that. There were some emotional moments in this.
Okay. All right. That's good. Yeah. So it's not enough to hold me back. It's a little, it's just a little eyebrow raising. That's all. Sure. As I get into my old curmudgeon-y age,
Gotcha. Yes.
Okay. So maybe R-rated comedies, not dead. You heard it first from the horse of the friar.
What?
The mouth of the friar. There we go.
All right.
Let's switch gears over to trending now, where maybe I won't fumble over my words.
Damn, son. Where'd you find this?
I found this all over the internet. Maybe not in the box office, however, though. The Flash box office update saw a 72.5% drop off in its second week, earning $15.14 million. That brings it up to $211 million worldwide, $87 million domestic there. But the 72.5% drop off is the second biggest by a comic book blockbuster, only ahead of Morbius, which saw a 73%, almost 74% drop. Jeez. And just in comparison of some other DC movies, yeah, Black Adam, 59% drop, Shazam 2, 69% drop. So maybe it wasn't a Rock problem. Hashtag The Rock was right.
Yeah, I talk about fumbling it. Jeez, this is remarkable. Not good. Yeah, and there's another detail that we came across too in the mix of everything, that Fandango was offering a buy one, get one sale for Flash tickets. That's embarrassing.
That's tough. With as much money that they poured into this and as much marketing that's gone behind it to end up having to go for a 2-for-1 sale, it's tough. It's a tough look.
It's really disappointing. I saw a graphic that got put out about just from the box office. I think it was opening weekend numbers for DC versus Marvel.
I saw that as well. Yeah.
It's not even close. Mm-hmm. And it's brutal. And I know the average person doesn't know anything like DC versus Marvel. I saw in comments and everything, and I've experienced this before with we'll call lay people for this world. They don't know that Batman isn't necessarily in the Avengers universe. Sometimes they can mix that stuff up. Same with Superman. Weird to think that with those two characters, but it is a thing. But when you look at the rest of DC, it's just, I do believe they have some really, really awesome characters. But the problem is they are not utilizing the ones who are best to bring in all the fans now. There are some characters that are more better suited for the audiences, the comic book movie audiences that we've now kind of seen today.
I also wonder, I think about the James Gunn's role in this, if he has any role aside from just sending out the tweets that it's the best comic book movie ever, which may end up hurt, you think about that, his what he's willing to say, to try to push it across, making the announcement of all the DC movies that were upcoming, and then also making the announcement that all these leftover movies weren't going to be a part of the universe, effectively leaving them dead in the water. 100%. I wonder how much did he kind of end up, you know, kicking himself just because, you know, he's the head of DC now.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I think, and look, I got to imagine too, if we talked about it when we reviewed the movie, the off the field issues with Ezra Miller probably weren't helpful too. So you combine that with the whole redoing of the DC universe, then the other elements that we've talked about already. It's just, there was a lot going wrong, going against this movie. In the end, not a bad movie, but I will say, I do wonder for DC, like when it comes to some of the decisions they have to make moving forward, where are they going to be apprehensive? Where are they going to be like, we don't want this to be another Flash situation where we spent all this money. And I think that is avoidable, but it's just, it's going to be like a lot of pressure, I think, is going to be on Gunn.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they just didn't do any marketing for this in theaters and just released it as a video on demand, buy it $20 off Prime or something like that. And just an at-home release. Would they have done better that way? Again, maybe lower expectations. You know, you remember Wonder Woman 84 is like the coming out as like the premiere on HBO Max on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever that launched a few years ago, like that makes it a little bit more palatable, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lower bar set with because when you look at Wonder Woman 84, obviously we did not give that a great grade, and it was pretty friggin' rough.
But how much worse would it have been if we actually went there and spent the money on it?
100%, 100%. I agree with you. Like, there's definitely a lower bar when you're talking about movies that are coming straight out of a streaming service. It's just like videos, like things that were straight to VHS and everything back in the day. So yeah, it probably would have helped. But in the end, it's still not a bad movie. It's just there's like we still gave it a solid grade.
After
we were fed a bill of goods, like you and I had all the reason to go in and then give this like a 75 because we're told it's the best comic book movie ever. We're not always in lockstep on what we're anti on, but we both definitely like have that happen to us. So it's
no, and we were optimistic above the median here. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, just kind of maybe stepping back and reading the tea leaves, that's kind of the general perception of it. But again, to reiterate your point, we both like this movie. So
yeah,
get the buy one, get one sale, you know, go wild to the movies.
Yeah, so that is it. That is definitely a deal that makes this worth seeing the Flash in theaters 100%.
And then go see No Hard Feelings. Who knows, you know?
What a drop.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Or maybe you could just stay home and watch Disney Plus, because there's Secret Invasion Season 1, Episode 1 released, which is about just under an hour or so. To be honest, I still haven't gotten through it. That was one of the items I downloaded while on my trip there, and I kept falling asleep at night because I was just exhausted. Got through about halfway of it, but I was kind of intrigued. I don't know if you have any early thoughts. I know what happens with Maria Hill.
Okay. I haven't watched any of it because I am very much in the camp of the people that are pissed off about there being AI art in the credits. I didn't know that.
So you're boycotting this entirely.
I can't boycott it entirely because obviously we are doing a show on it, but I will tell you right now, if you were like, I don't really care. I right now I'd be like, okay, we're not doing it. I really do not want to watch this. I will for the show because we have to.
Now, see, I get the hesitancy for the AI intro there. And it's a little wonky, but I get what they were going for, right? Because I think from a maybe like a purely creative standpoint, to have something that's considered alien, like AI, leaking in to a human production to kind of overtake it and kind of mask itself as a human creator production, I think is very meta and kind of interesting on a creative level. So it goes along with the general theme, I think, of what Secret Invasion is. Maybe that is taking too much license with that idea there. But I find that it kind of goes into this other kind of piece of news story that came out about Across the Spider-Verse and their animators saying that they were overworked and they're sometimes doing 11-hour shifts and kept being told to go back to the editing room and redo things. And then Amy Pascal responded, you know, welcome to making movies. But I find this kind of interesting. We're at a crossroads right now with humans saying they're being overworked, but also not wanting AI to come in and alleviate some of the pressure.
So two things. So first, when you go back to the whole bit that you were saying about using AI in the Skrull situation. Yeah, like from an artistic standpoint and like making a statement about the show and everything, it totally makes sense. But for all the frustration and everything that's around AI right now, to go and just not have that come out beforehand, it makes it look infinitely worse. And
you're saying around like the writer's strike and like some of the demands behind that. I can see that. Absolutely. Okay. So I see what you're saying.
And this is like a thing we've talked about before, Wes, with like other shows or movies where it's like, oh, you go and confirm a thing after you've already put it out there. And it's not like you're just, and I understand this is already like kind of a thing outside of the story of Secret Invasion, but it's still like something that should have been addressed beforehand. It seems like they're trying to, as much as it's a valid reason to do it, if I still don't trust it. It's after the fact. Why didn't you tell me beforehand? So I don't like that. I really hope that over the course of the series, that it would be great if we started to see less and less of that AI art and more real art just because of the way that the story goes or something. That'd be great. I'd have much less of an issue if that ended up being a case. I don't think that will be. I think it's wishful thinking on my part. But then when it comes to the Across the Spider-Verse stuff, this is where, again, like it's a tough situation because I hear you on like, I hear that sentiment of welcome to making movies. Like it's tough. It's not easy. You want to do these things. These are the desirable jobs. You're going to have to make some sacrifices. At the same time, I've seen videos where people talk about like animation, especially because of, you know, Across the Spider-Verse, everybody's been going nuts over it. And it's like the work situation that they have, they get these limited time frames, and movie studios are very demanding when it comes to this stuff. And we're talking like 11 hours a day on this shit. And it's crazy to me. Like, so it's either you lose your job to AI or you have to do that. I don't see how those are fair either way.
I don't think it's that black and white though. I don't think you're losing your job to AI necessarily. It's not like artificial intelligence created the Secret Invasion intro. There were people who were manipulating it and working with it and doing other things with it, you know. So it wasn't just like, hey, let's just write in some prompts. You know, this is a whole other graphic design studio that works specifically with AI to create these things. So like my whole point is to that is like, it's not going to be robots or humans. It's going to be the people who know how to manipulate the tool of AI that's going to be taking the jobs of the people who don't know how to do it.
Okay, but my thing is that's not art. That's never going to, like, it'll never be art in my book. Well, like, it's not created by the human hand. You're using a machine, like a machine to go and create, for the image to be produced. Because I understand that you still use machines to create images. I get that. But there's a pretty staunch difference.
Yeah, I guess so. This is like the music conversation too. You know, like you're not strumming a guitar. You know, you're just pressing buttons on a keyboard. But there's still.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I don't, and that's one I'm definitely, admittedly, not as passionate about. But it is like a strange thing. But it's like, but it, at the same time, with that, you're almost wasn't it more like a new genre was introduced when you brought in all like the different type of techno and everything?
Well, yeah, but this is. I think it's very clear. You can tell that it's not. You know, there is like some AI like immediacy that you can tell. There's like almost like a watermark that you can tell that it's like AI generated. There's a feel to it when you're watching that intro. So I think, again, there could be that space for like I said, this is like perfect, kind of the perfect intro for what this show is supposed to be.
If we heard that beforehand, then I would feel.
I don't think that's official. This is just me kind of spitballing that idea.
Oh no! I heard that was out there.
Really?
That. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it was the director or one of the producers. Oh, well, yes. Okay. No. I thought you were like you had it committed to memory because it sounded like verbatim what was said.
No. That okay. I didn't read that. Yeah. No. Okay. All right. But, well, I'm glad we're on the same page.
AI. Look, there's no question. Like the artwork that is produced by AI is impressive, and this like the stuff that they have for Secret Wars, it's weird. But it, like, you know, and people can say, oh, it's bad. It's like, there's plenty of weird art. That's the right creative choice for what you're trying to do. And I don't think what we have there is for Secret Wars or Secret Invasion is bad, but I'm just not going to support it because I don't care for a robot to be creating artwork that doesn't do anything for me. There's no, what's the statement being made? It's not a statement being made by a human. And that's like, that's part of what art is. So
I guess so. I got it. I got the statement being made. I don't know.
By a robot.
Well, yeah, but that's, again, it's the show.
We're not going to agree on this. It's
the same way I think about, like I was saying, like I was talking to my buddy over the weekend who works for the Boston Globe. He's about to have a kid. So I was like, do you think about how far up you can go in the business with it before, you start thinking elsewhere in journalism? And it came up with everything with like AI and stuff. I was like, do you think about content writing or something like that? And he's like, the content writing jobs are probably the first to go to AI at whatever point, and it's the journalism will be like some of the only ones that still have that human element that you need to it.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't know, but it's all interesting. But I think, again, you have to adapt to at some point. If this is already what's on the road, then you can drag your heels for as long as you can and just get left behind. I don't know.
It's going to be really annoying if that's what it comes to. I mean, I understand it with other walks of life. But when you're talking about art, I just don't get it. I genuinely don't understand what's the appeal. But
well, who gets art anyway? Isn't art subjective? People hang, duct tape a banana to a wall, and that's art, and goes for $150,000.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. I don't understand it. Why would you want it with a robot from a robot when it comes to art?
Well, when human people are making crap like that, like I just said, maybe the alternative is to be like, oh, let's just have a robot do this. I don't know.
I don't think there's any world where you can make me okay with this.
Oh no, we're just exchanging ideas.
I mean the royal you.
The NCNM podcast did not change my mind.
Yes, that's
the irony behind the whole show.
Yes, yes.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Welcome. We're almost coming up on the Independence Day now. More than ever, that rings true, right?
That is true. Yes, that is.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
A superb choice.
All right, so this week for the Comic Book Minute, no AI art as far as I know here, but there was a cover one time that I saw that was the AI art, and it did not go over well with people. But from Image this week, we got Vanish Issue 8. This is the conclusion of the first story. This is the second arc of it. Definitely heavy, some crazy action in it. It's been an awesome series. Donny Cates and Ryan Segment are expecting to go into this beyond this first arc, this first story, I should say. So I'm hoping that we end up seeing more. They did end it at a place where they don't have to touch it again if they don't want to, but I hope that's not the case. From DC, we got The Riddler Year 1, Issue 5. That is written by Paul Dano. Doc is reading that one called Dib, so I haven't got a chance to check this out. From Marvel, we have Ghost Rider, Issue 15. From Boom, there's Power Rangers Unlimited, The Coinless, Issue 1. So this is Lord Draken back at center stage. For those who don't know, this is like an evil. What is it?
Evil. Maybe. Could be maybe. Emo.
Look, it's on the brain. Evil version of Tommy Oliver, where he has both the White Ranger and Green Ranger powers. So spending more time with him, he's probably my favorite Power Ranger character, period. So some fun stuff there. As for TLDR this week, we are doing the July solicit a little earlier than normal, just because we have the 4th of July coming up. So we're trying to keep things a little abbreviated for that week.
All right. Let me share my screen here real quick. I got some nice graphics coming up.
Oh boy. Graphics.
A little visual aspect for those who like to smash that like button on YouTube, CMM_podcast. I keep X-ing out of this and I keep having to reshare it like an
idiot. My goodness. Do not know how to... Have you done this before or no? Like share a screen? Yeah, you have.
There we go. Okay. All right. So let me get this back up here. And we'll get it in a second because we're going to switch gears. Where is it? Now I'm all screwed up.
Oh my goodness.
Switch over.
Yeah, this is something.
It's morphin' time.
I can't produce and talk and then do, and I can't chew gum. I can't do all this stuff. So we're going to get to our main topic here. Which is our definitive best Batman on the big screen CMM rankings. It's a wordy title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, buddy.
You hear that?
Where's Rachel?
I'm Batman.
We're going to find out just who Batman is. We put together an Excel spreadsheet. We won't be sharing that. We'll share some photos of everything, though. And we kind of split this up into two groups. So we have Bruce Wayne and we have Batman. Nothing too crazy here. Pretty simple stuff, cut and dry. And we have, what do we have here? About eight Well, yeah, about 8 and 7.5 or so. But we have 8 people on our list. We'll get to it here. And we'll, how do you want to start this? Do you want to go through our Batman and Bruce Wayne rankings, or do we just want to go through all of it combined and then kind of break it down as we talk?
I think we should break it down combined, break down the combined scores and kind of go from there. So let's start with the one who is, so there's 8 people that have portrayed Batman on the big screen. Let's start with the one who's at the bottom, but technically we marked as a non-applicable for us, and that is Will Arnett's Lego, is it the Lego movie or Lego Batman movie? I never saw it.
Lego Batman, but he was in the Lego movie too, so I think it was a spinoff there. Now, it was tough. Like with the Kevin Conroy types, if you want to include like Mask of the Phantasm and other ventures that he's been a part of, or Will Arnett there, he's, you know, the voice is just not enough for me. It's not enough. It's not comparable. It's almost like how I make a little delineation between animated movies and live action movies. You got to kind of do the same here.
They are, their voice acting is a talent in and of itself, but they are different things. I will say, like, we're not talking about Kevin Conroy here either, but when I think of Batman's voice, it is 100% Kevin Conroy's voice. There are no two ways about it. Kevin Conroy's voice is Batman's voice, which is, I mean, when I think of Batman first, I think of an animated version. I don't necessarily think of live action. So that's saying something.
Not now, Christian. Not now.
All right. Let's see. So then we move, Wes, to number 7 in our ranking. So
yes,
the way we graded these things, just to reiterate some stuff for everybody, we tried to do this. We tried to calculate this out, and I believe we kind of mentioned it at the end of our Flash exit survey.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to create a spreadsheet and give these Batman a grade for their Batman performance and then a grade for their Bruce Wayne performance, because it's obviously something we talk about a ton. Is he a better Bruce Wayne? Is he a better Batman? We took that all into account here. So coming in at the bottom of our list for live action Batman big screen performances at number 7, pulling in a score of 12 after getting a, is it a 5 from me and a 7 from you? Low score is not good. George Clooney is number 7 on our list.
Yeah, not very good. And again, I think he gets a little bit of a bump for me as far as the Bruce Wayne category, just from The Flash alone. We'll see a couple of Batman get a little bit of a boost from The Flash here, because I think he's aged into a very like debonair, older Batman. Now, there's no running away from the Bat credit card or the Bat nipples of Batman and Robin, or just the overall hokiness that Jerry Bruckheimer did with that. He was not a good Batman. He fell susceptible to Poison Ivy. You know, he did catch Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze, but he was a true simp to Poison Ivy there. So I can't really back him too much with that, but he makes up for it in what I think ages out to an older Bruce Wayne.
So I'm glad that we were in lockstep when it came to his grade on Batman. He got the lowest grade of the bunch on both of our lists. I was much lower on his Batman than yours, and I gave him the second lowest grade for my Bruce Wayne grade.
Sure.
I could have gone absolute rock bottom with him though too, because honestly, Wes, I was rewatching some clips today just to refamiliarize myself because I haven't watched it in how long. And my goodness, dude, it's like I'm just watching George Clooney. I'm not watching an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand, like, hey, George Clooney's made a living off of that and everything. But when we're talking about these characters that are larger than life, larger than some of these actors that we're talking about, you got to get it. You can't just go up there and be yourself. Generally speaking, that's not going to work. You're not playing Aquaman. You know, maybe if you did that, then we'd be okay. But no, not in this case.
No, and as far as a lover and as a mentor, it works, right? But there's nothing about George Clooney that screams action hero. You know,
no.
I know he's done 3 Kings. He's done a couple of action movies, but he also wasn't as good of an actor as he is now as he was then. You know, so he was still kind of trying to prove himself that he could be a big screen actor.
That's fair. I mean, you look at some of these actors and it was a much different time than where they are now. But regardless, I was watching it and I was like, I know Wes likes to, like, this movie has gotten a little bit better over time for Wes and everything, but there's no way that he's going to give him that too good of a grade. You gave him a pretty good grade for his Bruce Wayne, though.
Yeah. Like I said, I liked his Bruce Wayne. It aged better. Again, as an older mentor and maybe a coxman, he's a good Bruce Wayne.
That's about it. So I think there's a little bit more to Bruce Wayne than that. But I was still, given how you felt about Batman and Robin, I thought he would actually come in second to last and not last. But second to last on our list by a hair. He got 6 score from me, a 7 from you. Again, low score, not great. Adam West is our 6th best on screen. Now, this is not big screen, technically. But
yeah, you know, we got to give credit where credit is due. He's the original there, so I think that's about where all he earns his points. Because although I could see him again as an older Bruce Wayne, kind of very he has a billionaire, rich, waspy type of vibe to him, so I can see him carrying that very well. But as far as maybe the tragic side of him, that's where he and George Clooney are both lacking in the Bruce Wayne aspect.
Yeah. So when it comes to him versus everybody else too, he is absolutely like the product of just a different era. So it's not even fair in some ways to include him on this list. The fact that he went ahead of Clooney, I think, speaks to how bad Clooney was as Batman previously. But like, you listen to West and there's just really, really like dated, poor writing. And it's all, and again, it's just not Batman whatsoever, and he's not acting as Batman at all. It's like I feel like if I close my eyes, I would think this. I'm maybe listening to Adam West on Family Guy. I wouldn't know any better.
Right. Exactly. I think that's how we're all kind of introduced to Adam West, is through Family Guy and not the Batman series. But I do give him points for the comic book esque feeling of the show, where you get the bam and the thwop and all the onomatopoeias that would go with old school comic books. So
yeah,
maybe that was ahead of its time. That was almost like the live action Spider-Verse before Spider-Verse.
Yeah, you might be able to argue.
That's a stretch, but yeah, we can go there.
But he putting him so low on this list is not fair to him entirely. But at the same time, like, we also can't not touch on his portrayal of the character.
Yeah, we got to mention the GOAT. Not the GOAT, but the original, the Godfather.
Exactly. Now, we from there, we get a pretty significant jump for it to accrue a total of 19 points, 9 from me, 10 from you. For our 5th best Batman, we have Val Kilmer.
Yeah, absolutely. And this for me, I love him as a Bruce Wayne. He was my third highest ranked Bruce Wayne. Again, he has that waspy, debonair feeling. He can sweep Chase Meridian right off of her feet. A very tall and leggy blonde in, why am I blanking on her name? Nicole Kidman. Thank you. And Batman Forever. So great soundtrack to that as well. Doesn't work out. He's a victim of the Jerry Bruckheimer era. So all the hokiness and all like the backdrops and everything doesn't really do him all that well. But from a Bruce Wayne standpoint, he wears the tux very well. He wears the millionaire status very well. And he is very kind of like tough to read. He's kind of a stone, which I think is good. I think that's good in a Bruce Wayne. Now, maybe in the comic books, that's different, but I like something that you can't really get a read on emotionally.
Yeah.
It's cut off there.
So with Bruce Wayne in the comics, and I think we see it in the animated series, as much as I haven't watched a lot of that stuff. I should go back and watch some of that from when we were kids. Like that Val Kilmer's portrayal felt very like accurate in that regard. And again, looking back at some of the clips, I actually watched quite a bit of that leading up to this, because I was like, holy shit, like Val Kilmer actually plays like Bruce Wayne how I would expect someone to try and play Bruce Wayne. And I'm not familiar enough with Val Kilmer to think that, you know, to differentiate, like, is he playing him or is, like, I know
yeah, Top Gun, right.
But that's about it. And it's like, he's not playing the same character he did in Top Gun. I know that.
Yeah, he's not playing he's that in, yeah, not in Heat either. Right. Little different characters.
So I have to give him that. And especially when I'm watching the scene with him and Jim Carrey, like before he goes full Riddler, it's like, yeah, this very much feels like he's playing Bruce Wayne the way that, like, the safe way. And that's not a knock. Like he gets it down. So I'm with you. He was my number 3 Bruce Wayne as well, but he was we were pretty similar ballpark when it came to Batman grade for Val Kilmer. I gave him a 3. You gave him a 4.
Yeah, and again, it's just a little bit more there. I think he does, again, a little bit of the mentorship, the reluctant mentorship that we get with Robin and Chris O'Donnell in that movie. I was a huge fan of Batman Forever as a kid. Had a lot of the toys, had it on VHS. But so he's the reluctant guy, but he feels like he has to take him in after, witnessing the death of the Flying Graysons at the circus there. But again, not a great fighter. You're still dealing with the cowl and the helmet that's tough to move with, which we'll touch on a little bit with Michael Keaton. You know, technically, that's all the same Batman universe, technically 89 to Forever to Batman and Robin. Just with different actors. So, you know, you still kind of have the same issues that you have with Batman 89 there. And he's not really, you know, like the fighting sequences and everything haven't really worked up. I'm not a big fan of his Batmobile. That doesn't really work out to me well.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Yeah, I mean, just looking at his, I just remember a specific moment where he's like kind of like flying in on the scene, and it's just a product of a different era, but it just looks so wonky compared to what we get with some of these new Batman, like, you know, it's just they didn't have that same stuff. But the writing around him too, you're right. Like, you're bringing up the reluctance of him and everything. He was very much there. Whereas, like, when I think about him versus Clooney, obviously right next to each other in terms of when they portrayed the character, I'm watching Clooney and he's like, am I always like, does it always have to be my way or the highway, Alfred? And I'm like, are you even fucking trying to be like a character? You're just being yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't Chris O'Donnell's best work there. Not the best Robin, although I loved his suit in Batman and Robin. That was the whole Bat Family suit with Alicia Silverstone. Is that it?
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, if you told me like, hey, Chris O'Donnell, like, let's give him another chance, but he was to play like he gets to play Red Hood, I'd say play it pretty similarly to how you tried playing out Dick Grayson at first, because you weren't too far off from Jason Todd. You were a bit of an annoyance.
Yeah. Absolutely here. Okay, so now we'll get into our next best Batman here. Number four. I'm not even doing all of this here. One second. I got too many screens open.
I was taking care of everything for you. So I gave this individual a 12 out of 10 in full. You gave this individual an 8 out of 10 in full. It's a lower grade than Val Kilmer. I had to carry this individual. Do you have the image ready, or are we abandoning that?
I'm working on it here. Here we go.
Okay. So without further ado, number four on our list with an aggregate score of 20 is Michael Keaton. Number four as Batman. Wes, please explain how the hell this happened.
Yeah, again, I think he wins a lot of points just from The Flash alone. I think he comes back and is, again, is a beneficiary of the updated fighting styles, the updated graphics and cinematography that you can do with, 30 years, 40 years of advancements in cinema history there. So I think that works for him. But again, he's not a good Bruce Wayne. That's what kills it for me a little bit there. I have him as actually the worst Bruce Wayne, because he's not good looking. He's got kind of like an afro going on, like a mini afro. He's got the lisp. You know, I don't really know how it works out for him. You know, I don't know how he pulls Kim Basinger. He's relatively short. He's not an action guy by any means. So that's when it comes to the Batman there. But he's got such the iconic yellow and black emblem there, which we see on the screen. It kind of saves up for things. The grappling gun that we see in the Flash fight that you touched on so eloquently last episode, all that stuff kind of makes up for it on the Batman end.
So when it comes to the Bruce Wayne end, I think you raised some fair points. I wouldn't go and say he's the worst, though, because again, like in fairness, again, Adam West, like, I don't want to keep hedging this, but it's just like the writing and everything, the way he talks and whatnot, it's like, he's just not playing Bruce Wayne. And again, with George Clooney, I understand, like, naturally George Clooney is like a playboy, but that's not like the only thing that comes with Bruce Wayne. And also, like, with George Clooney, it's just like, again, I feel like I'm just watching him play the character. So that already puts him up a couple notches. Then there's that is between him and Pattinson for me. And we'll get into Pattinson more later, but I gave Keaton a 5 out of a possible, you know, 8 points, would have been the highest that he could have gotten. But then I gave him, he's my second best Batman on screen, because while he did deal with the unfortunate bit, as you mentioned, with the suit, he also still like talks and carries himself like Batman would. So yes, the action stuff definitely hurt, but obviously he gets the huge redemption when it comes to the Flash, and that absolutely, maybe a little recency bias on my end, but it carried some weight for me. But he, getting the character right in how he goes about his business and everything. Because, like, when I think about Kilmer, like, him talking as Bruce Wayne, again, maybe more a product of the writing, but it's just, like, when he's Batman, there were still some moments I was like, eh, not so much. But with Keaton, he has that as much as any of the top four.
Yeah, and again, I think about that mentorship, too, that he kind of takes on with Barry Allen there. So it's not really the Bat family, so to speak, but that as the older, aging Batman Bruce Wayne, he does that pretty well. Someone who's willing to accept his death there, I think that's kind of prototypical of a good Batman. But all that stuff comes with the Flash, so I'm not sure if that really works. Again, the quirkiness of Batman 89 kind of lives on its own. And it's credited for so much, right? But it's like there are some shortcomings with it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And while I don't know that, actually, when with the grades barrel on my end too, like he's tied for technically third in my grading. But the one thing I wanted to note too, I feel like this got missed when we were talking during our Flash Detective survey. But for one of the things that aged really well, or will age really well from this, is his explanation of multiversal, like how dimensions. I don't know if I don't think we talked about that. And it was bugging me afterwards. Like that's something that he did a great job. Whoever wrote that, it was perfect, and he obviously went about it very cleanly.
Yes, there's some things that can get very convoluted when we talk about time travel you think about Tenet, right? Like how confusing of a movie that was. It's like, just kind of go with it and turn your brain off.
And
you know, as we get all to this multiversal type stuff, this was very, very succinct. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Anything else on Keaton before we move to number three?
No. Let's move on here.
Okay. So with these three, with Kilmer, Keaton, and our number three, they're only separated by a total of 2 points. So it was very close in the end here. This is for me again, tied third for Wes. This is actually, this person is behind Kilmer. Robert Pattinson is our number three Batman, pulling in 21 points. I gave him a 12. And Wes gave him a 9. He is my number one Batman. And he was not as high when it came to his Bruce Wayne portrayal, but Wes, please take it away first.
Yeah. So I'll touch on the Bruce Wayne stuff again, cause that seems to be where my sweet spot is. And I wasn't in favor of the emo Bruce Wayne. I understand that's the more tortured soul that we're talking about. That doesn't a George Clooney may not have, or maybe even Val Kilmer to that point. He was a little bit more buttoned up. This one, he wears it a little bit more, as you can see, and that emo look that we have on screen there of Robert Pattinson. But, he's very catty. I think about the death scene or when Alfred's on his deathbed or on the hospital bed there. And he's just yelling at him for all the stuff that he didn't tell him and like blaming all this stuff on him. It's just not really there. But again, it's a younger Batman that hasn't fully developed yet. So it's a little tough to compare him as like a year two, 20 something Batman Bruce Wayne to a 30, 40 something Bruce Wayne as Ben Affleck, Christian Bale, George Clooney, Michael Keaton. They all kind of play off to be.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, I was just checking as we were going through this, because I know where you stand very much on Pattinson. There was a Batman Adam West movie, so we were right to have him on this list. I was getting worried going through all this. Anyways, so when it comes to his portrayal, you raise fair points, but I also look at it and think, if Batman was like to be created today, or if someone like if someone was to be Batman today, it would make a lot of sense if he was a friggin' weirdo like Pattinson is in this movie.
I can see that. Yeah.
And as you said, it's early on in his career. As Batman, he was still weird at that time in his life. This is obviously more modern take.
It's a guy who's into bats. It's pretty weird.
Yes. So it's not something that like is in, out of the 80s or whatever, like that weird might be a little bit different regardless. Yes. It's a different take. And that's why he ended up getting a 4 out of a possible 8 for me in my rankings as Bruce Wayne. But at the same time, I don't dislike his portrayal. It's just the Bruce Wayne that we've always got. He's not anywhere near that. But I do find his take very interesting. It's just I got to give it. But when we talk about his Batman, I've said it before. When we did the review for it, I mean, I was in love with his Batman. Again, when we talk about with Keaton, where he like the way he carries himself and the way he talks, he has that part of being Batman down. Where as much as the fighting was an issue, Pattinson has both the way he carries himself, the way he talks, and then the action. He has everything. He is the full package. He is flawless. The only thing he may not have going for him is his look, unlike you know, an Affleck maybe. But at the same time, he's still like a very tall and has like more of an Arkham Asylum vibe.
He's still physically imposing, just not in the same sense that, Ben Affleck is. But I think where they do have similarities is that brawling fighting style that you touched on, which I like. Remind me again, where did I have him ranked as Batman?
You have him as number as you give him a 6 out of a possible 8. So that is your number 3 Batman.
Okay. All right. So I could I could be teased up into 7 there. Maybe sure. Maybe above Bale's Batman. I think I have that right. Yeah. So I could be convinced up there because I think that's close because I do like that. Then you also have the great detective work that he's working with Commissioner Gordon on, and you really see him kind of work that out there. But I prefer that brawling style over that more martial arts style that what we see with Bale throughout the Dark Knight series.
So before we get into our top two, okay, right now we have it as we have at the bottom of our list, we have George Clooney, then Adam West, then Val Kilmer, then Michael Keaton, and then Robert Pattinson. However, when you look at your grade, you have it as Kilmer ahead of Pattinson, who's ahead of Keaton. How do you feel about that based on your grades?
Now that we're talking about it, now that we're talking it through, I didn't feel good about it going into it. But once you put in your results and we got the totals and it still ended up the same way, I was like, fine, we'll leave it that way. But push comes to shove. Val Kilmer is not my third favorite Batman. That's just crazy. I'm not willing to say that, but I'm not a fan of the math that we did to get here.
That's fair. Yeah, we did it on a very binary system, but now everybody knows that numbers don't tell the full story. That's what it comes down to. That's why we did this today for the people. So we ended up actually having a tie for number one, but Wes and I always have a way to break these ties. Whoever got the highest individual score gets the extra edge here. And somehow that ended up working out with Bale and Affleck coming in at number two with a total of 28 points, 13 from me, 15 from you is Christian Bale's Batman.
Yes. Yeah. And again, a lot of this has to do just with it being a part of the best, in my opinion, one of the best, if not top two comic book movies ever, right? With The Dark Knight there. Heath Ledger has so much to do with it. But when you talk about he's like a really good douchebag Wall Street American psycho Bruce Wayne, where you know that he's got that mask on, but underneath there's something else that's boiling, that's brewing, that I was kind of alluding to, that Val Kilmer did well. So he kind of takes Val Kilmer kind of walked so Christian Bale could run, and kind of carrying on that similar Bruce Wayne. But you also get the beginning story of him, you know, going Batman Begins in his journey of kind of finding himself and finding his place in the world. I like that as well. So I think you get a full, it's actually, you know, one of the only instances where you get a full completion of one actor finishing one Batman story. So, yeah, you know, it favors him a little bit more that way. And then also being a part of the greatest comic book movie ever, you know, say what you will about his voice, but I, you know, in his martial arts, I prefer a little bit more of that brawling style, like I said, but it's still really good action. It's good detective work, especially in The Dark Knight. Pound for pound, he's really good.
Yeah. I love I love Pattinson. I'm very excited for the future with Pattinson playing Batman. Obviously Keaton holds a special spot in our hearts, and there's another Batman who's a little higher on this list technically than Bale. But I think when I think of live action Batman, I think I'm always going to think of Christian Bale's Batman, because it was so next level. And it was before the age of comic book movies, and this guy, it was everybody was all in on Batman after the once he was going across from Heath Ledger, it was huge at that point. And then it was even bigger when it was going into the third one. And I know there's like mixed feelings about Dark Knight Returns or Dark Knight Rises, excuse me. But yeah, it's still his Batman is always going to be the live action one that I think of. So you ended up giving him a slightly higher grade as Batman than I did, but I gave him a little bit. He was my number two Bruce Wayne. And the reason where he probably doesn't edge out my number one Bruce Wayne is probably appearance. But in terms of like encompassing the entirety of what Bruce Wayne is, being a recluse at times, being a playboy at times, he gets that done perfectly. I think there are, I think that's partially to do with the writing, not just to do with his portrayal. There may be a little bit like a little bit lacking when it comes to that, but the way he was written, it still, I factor that in. And I think they got like Bruce Wayne written very well for showing all of his sides.
And for this to be, you know, outside of the, you know, greater comic book universe where these movies kind of stand alone on their own with a, with Christopher Nolan doing this, not really being attached to the DC universe, despite being Batman, that works out in his favor and being a little bit more grounded. And again, kind of setting the foundation for Matt Reeves, the Batman, to also be grounded with a lot of tactile gadgets and everything. Of course, he has the Tumblr, which is cool. But you know, they're using all these, this different type of tech with Fox there, Lucius Fox there. Like, I think of the stuff in The Dark Knight when they overtake all the phones, you know, like that's kind of like a good trick there, you know, but it's not like super souped up comic booky gadgets and tricks and powers to get it all done. So that kind of works in its favor. And also, as we get to our number one, I think both of these actors had the most time served in their roles, which helps, again, kind of filling out that story a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I didn't even think about that. I wasn't sure when it came to our number one. So our number one had the same score of 28, but he was my number one Bruce Wayne, and he was your number one Batman. That is Ben Affleck's Batman. And I gave him actually a pretty low grade when it came to his Batman portrayal. I gave him a 5, which puts him at my number 4 for Batman. And I like him in, Batman versus Superman. And obviously when we see him show up in the Flash, but in the original Justice League, because I can't remember how good he was in Snyder's or not, because that wasn't like the first thing I was thinking about when watching Snyder's cut of the Justice League. But the original one, I watched him and I'm like, I know he's a human, just a human, and he's going up against these aliens, but that's the whole thing with Batman. It doesn't matter who he's going up against. He's supposed to be able to figure it out. And seeing how he went about his business there, it's like, dude, you're just, you can't hang at all. Like, I appreciate his fearlessness at the end of it, but it's just like, you have no business being there. And that's just, I understand, like, if this was real life, that would probably be what happens to Batman, but that's not what happens to Batman in the stories, like any of them. So it's just, that always really bugged me. And I understand that may not be his a Ben Affleck problem, but either way, I'm still factoring in a lot of the writing going into all of these castings.
See, I love the brawling style, the big hulking Bruce Wayne there, and he also, or Batman, I should say.
Yes.
You know, you see all the really cool gadgets with the tech suit there in Batman versus Superman, and then again, you see it all kind of in the Batcave and stuff, and Justice League. But I think the Bruce Wayne is also really good for me as well. I think when you look at Ben Affleck, I think he, again, wears that tortured soul really well. And, you know, he's memed to death with it, whether he's smoking a cigarette or Karen Dunkin' Donuts or whatever it is, right? He always has that kind of pained look on his face. Mm. And again, he also has that kind of rich douchebag cleft chin sort of thing that works for him, right? So I think that all kind of plays up and be like, again, pound for pound, the best of both worlds there. And again, someone who's like grappling with his own morality, in his place later in life among all these gods, I think that's fair to question. I think that would be typical of Batman trying to figure out his place and how he can actually help. And he's like, all right, I got to figure this out here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, and it's not so much that, it's more like when we watch him in the fight, he's like running and having to hide and dodge and like can't really engage. Like that's,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like the action where it's like, this is, but like when we see him in Batman versus Superman, like the first bit of action we get from him, it's friggin' amazing. There's no two ways about it. And you bring up his appearance too. When you think of like, okay, if you were to say which Batman looks most like the Batman from animated version from the comics, there's no question that Ben Affleck's Batman, number one with a bullet in that regard. And I think that's where I kind of gave him some points with Bruce Wayne as well, just because like, yeah, I think he is a good Bruce Wayne, but like we also, I feel like we, while we see a lot of him in, we see bits and pieces of him mixing. I don't know if we see him quite as much play Bruce Wayne as we do Batman, especially when you compare it to some of the other individuals here. But again, like his, he's just like, he's like the embodiment of Bruce Wayne, like to a T.
Yeah, and his suit, like you said, I'm here for the suit. I'm here for the emblem. I love the big fat emblem to match the big fat hulking Batman there. I like the stubby ears a little bit more than the big, really pointed, defined ears. So it all kind of works a little bit more for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the conclusion of our list. So to run through it again one more time, the rock bottom for us is George Clooney's Batman. Then just ahead of him, Adam West's Batman, of course, different era. We want to just note that again. Then Val Kilmer coming in at number five. Number four is Michael Keaton's Batman. Then number three, Robert Pattinson. Number two, tied for first, but ended up losing the tiebreaker, Christian Bale. And number one is Ben Affleck. But really, West, the number one here is Batman, because he won all the categories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Batman's the big winner here, right? We're all Batman.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so maybe we make some waves with how viral we are with and how bad our choices are on the Batman here. So maybe when we put it out to the universe, we'll see what goes on.
I feel okay. So I know I put you on the spot, but we talked about it beforehand about how we felt about our individual list. I'm actually pretty happy with how mine ended up. I was just blown away with the Kilmer stuff, but like Pattinson versus Keaton, I'm higher on Pattinson than I am right now than any of the other ones, just because of recency bias and because he's the future. But all of my like top four, which were our top four, they were all within a point of each other.
Yeah. So overall,
I'm throwing you under the bus. I just want everybody to know.
Yeah, that's fine. I can take it at this point. I could take it at this point. Yeah.
Broad shoulder. Yeah, now.
Yeah, that's right. I got to have dad's skin, thick skin.
Yep.
Fat skin.
It's morphin' time.
All aboard!
Choo choo, bitches.
All right, Nick, you got a lot of stuff down here. So you finished BoJack Horseman. What'd you think?
Finally finished it, and oh my god, like it's a dark show. Obviously, everybody knows that who's watched it. I'm sure you've heard about it. And I'm sure everybody has. I think I was really late to the party, but I'm very thankful for Lauren introducing me to this show. It was so damn good. It was dark the whole time, but I was always ready to watch more and more. But by the end, the last three, four episodes, more than any other episodes, I was like, holy shit. Like, it was just a crazy spiral to the end. And then the last minute, 30 seconds, like the way it ends, it's just like, fuck, that's just so right for this fucking show. God,
I don't think I finished it. I don't think I've picked up on it, just because of how, not that I didn't like it, but I was like, I'm not in the space to be that depressed out of it.
It's
dark. The one episode, there's a couple things I remember is that him going on the bender with his former child star.
Mm-hmm.
And then him hitting on what is it like his ex-girlfriend's daughter and then getting into a thing with like the young college horse.
The young college horse was his sister, which may be a spoiler depending on where you are in things. So it was a spoiler. Yeah.
Maybe I went through it. Maybe I just forgot it. I don't know.
Okay.
It's been a while.
I'll tell you what. I'm sure Keith, I know, was a big fan of the show, and I would imagine everybody else like was watching it as it was coming out. That's one of the shows where I'm really glad that I had it all at once. We didn't watch it in the span of just a month, but it was like, you know, I feel like we started at the beginning of the year, maybe February, March. So we worked through it pretty fast, but it's like, I'm so glad I was able to take it all in at once because there's so many little things that I'm able to appreciate along the way.
Yeah.
Whereas like season to season, I'm sure people will still appreciate it, but it's just, there's so many little things in this show that pop up, you know, over the course of the season and whatnot. Sorry, there's a fly by me.
Did you catch it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. No, you didn't. You didn't catch it, did you?
I did, yeah, but I cleaned my hand off.
Oh,
it's a tiny little thing.
No evidence. You can't prove it.
This is fair. That's that's fair.
What is a good person?
A good person is a movie starring Florence Pugh and Morgan Freeman, and it came out this year, actually. And by the way, this was available for like $6 on Amazon Prime, which you can watch it there. Nothing wrong with supporting it. You can buy it there for like $21 and keep it permanently. Or you could go to the library if you have a library card and you could rent it for free, which is what we did.
Wow, look at that, huh?
Yeah, brand new movie. Like, I think actually looking at the box, I'm pretty sure it came out like on, or it was, got to the library on DVD like June 23rd, so not long before we're recording this. But dude, I just saw the fly. I didn't catch it. Damn it. Oh, I did. What the hell is that in my hand then?
Maybe you have multiple ones there. Who knows?
Okay.
But you're really living free and dying out there up in New Hampshire. You're living up to the motto.
This is very true. But A Good Person is such an emotional movie, and it's about Florence Pugh, who goes through this traumatic experience. Her relationship with Morgan Freeman is very tense. The whole movie is very tense, and she's basically becomes addicted to prescription painkillers. She was good like stuff. On top of the world, had everything going for it, and then this descent with this character. And I feel like we've like, actually when you talk about like BoJack, right, he is a very self-destructive character, and I'm watching him at times, I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Like how come on. And it's just, he'll go and put himself in these shitty situations, and it's just like, it feels like it's just a little too far. Like, I love the show, but like there are times where, like, it just feels like it's a cartoon, so I can let it go. Mm-hmm. But whereas the live action, it might bother me more. Yeah. Florence Pugh plays, like, to me, like an addict, like a fairly new addict. Like, she was all within a span of a year for this character. It felt very like real. It made a lot of sense. And
maybe she did a lot of research.
Maybe. I teared up, I think, 3 times in that movie. The ending got me real bad. And there was like a withdrawal scene where it was really like, I just got goosebumps. So
that's any withdrawal scene, I'm always drawn back to the Suicide Diaries with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like one of his early roles. He like freaks out off of heroin.
Or is that the one? How am I supposed to live?
What's that?
Is that the one where he says, how am I supposed to live?
I don't really remember all the movie. We watched it in high school psychology class. Yeah. He's a basketball player.
Yeah. Okay. I use that meme a lot. That's why. But yes. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Anyways. So we put that together.
Yes. But while I've been watching that, you were traveling abroad, apparently.
Yeah, it's just a work trip. I got screwed up like an idiot here too. I was supposed to leave. I was supposed to go to Indianapolis. Short flight, 2.5 hours. I had a 1 o'clock flight up in Boston, so I get there at 12. I go to check in, and it says you missed your flight. And apparently, I got an email that got filtered into my spam folder or like my Mimecast that said it got pushed up to like 11:30. So I
missed.
So I had to sit around the airport for 6 hours, and I couldn't even complain about anything too, because they're like, we sent you the email, we did everything.
Yep.
You're supposed to do. It's just like, yeah, I screwed up. I'm not willing. It's tough for me to admit that, because I feel like I didn't do anything wrong, but in the eyes of them,
I don't think I'd say you screwed up. I just think it's an unfortunate situation. Like, they didn't screw up. It's just like, it's shit.
It was not good. I was fuming for a little bit. You know, there's no worse place to be. Then you have to go and go through TSA, and like, such a degrading experience. Take my shoes off, take my belt off and everything, and go stand up like a robot through a radiation machine. It's a whole, I hate the whole process. So I took, luckily I had 6 hours to decompress and then like get on the airplane and not cause a scene, you know, So I went to Indianapolis, first time going there. Beautiful city there. Very, very walkable, very open. I don't know if you've been there. That's not too far from when you went to school.
I don't think I've been in there. I think I've driven through it. I don't think I've been in Indy, no. I've been in Indiana, but not Indianapolis. Anyways. Okay.
Yeah, but it's nice. Everything's very cheap there. The people are very accommodating. Like, it was a great trip. And also what I thought was amazing, Lucas Oil Stadium is like legit in the like proper city limits.
Oh, wait, I've been there for a wedding. You just reminded me because of Lucas Oil, because I think I drove by it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really okay. Now I remember, it's really nice. You can like walk around there very easily.
Yeah. You feel very like safe at night. I was like right in the downtown area. You know, it's like very accommodating for conventions, tons of hotels and everything. So very, very cool. But like, what a cool experience. That's got to be one of the only stadiums that's actually like in the city.
Yeah.
So you can just kind of like walk there, you know, like,
yeah, it's weird. It's,
for football.
It's, yeah. For football. Yeah. That's
baseball. Fair. There's a ton that,
yeah,
that works.
That's
out
right.
For.
Baseball and basketball. So yeah. I was confused. Yeah. I know Philly, it's easy, cause I'm pretty sure like the 76ers and whatever. The
oh,
Eagle
it's a
stadium.
Whole complex right there. Yeah. Right.
But it's also, you're in Philly. So, I mean,
yeah, true. Yeah.
It's wild. Though. You bring up Indianapolis, and as you jog my memory, when we talk about, like, I know, like, everyone's like, oh, it's, you know, New York is obviously a big place to visit. And, you know, if you come up around here in Boston and everything, but Indianapolis and Chicago, two very clean cities. Mm-hmm. And it's just like New York and Boston's not dirty, but in comparison,
it's getting dirty.
In comparison, it's not even close.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Boston or New York and Philly are very,
Philly's. Yeah.
There's a density feeling to both those cities too. That kind of, yeah. I think add to that like dirty feeling.
And I know Chicago's not without its flaws. I know that
they got plenty. Yeah.
But at the same time, like the nice parts of Chicago are absolutely freaking
sure. Chicago summertime in Chicago. That's what I always hear. It's great.
Yeah. But I've forgotten that. I forgot about it.
I didn't get to explore too much. I was, you know, had my nose to the grind there, but it was a nice little city walking around there.
Nice. Well, you know, it's funny that when you, I knew you had a trip problem, like you told the group, but
yeah,
when I looked at the note originally, I was like, oh, did he have to deal with the new, like, Logan delays?
Oh no, that's not like yet. Next week or something. Dude, like that. 2 weeks.
Fucking, what a joke.
I know.
How is that okay? How is that allowed?
For the whole summer, right? For the whole summer.
Whole friggin' summer. 2 hours delays. Who said this was like, well, yeah, we're going to do this.
Yeah, but you have a decent airport in New Hampshire, though, right? You can go to some Manchester.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still insane. I still got to drive into the city too. I don't know. Well, I take the train a lot now, but it's just like,
yeah,
it's brutal, man. It's
yeah, it's a huge pain in the ass. Oh, dude, I mean, it's TF Green if I'm going anywhere now.
This is true. TF Green Yeah. It's funny because I feel like it's a pretty well kept secret, like just like a South Coast thing. Mm-hmm. When we were looking at like, you know, honeymoon stuff, I was like, hey, let's look at Providence, and didn't end up working out pricing wise, but she was like, Providence, like, yeah, it's so easy to get in and out.
Oh yeah, in and out of there. Yeah, yeah, it's nothing like Logan. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, let's move into this week in the DSG real quick. So hashtag Dork is doing an episode on summer shows, so it's going to be a bunch of little different ones that they're hitting on there. I know Rich has been watching a lot of different stuff as his schedule has changed. Mac and Goo actually finally are doing their I Think You Should Leave episode a while back. I assumed they were doing it at time, and I think they took some time to stew on it, figure out where they really feel about these episodes. So I'm very excited to listen to that. TLDR, I mentioned already, July solicit. This week we're doing it a little bit early because of 4th of July. And then I've Heard It Both Ways, season 6, episode 4 of Psych. And then for the streamers, you can find Doc on Twitch at Backcracka, Shime at Shime Time on Twitch, and then the Dork Boys do all their video game playing over on the hashtag Dork YouTube page.
Yeah, and what do we got going on next week, Nick? We have a little free play Sunday.
We do, yeah. We have not. Monday. We'll figure it out. We haven't talked because we do have the holiday, so I didn't know what you wanted to do. Like,
oh,
you know,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, it's coming up quick there. Yeah, just between this whole weekend was crazy. So just coming back from the trip, and then we had a whole bunch of her family stuff we had to go to. So yeah, we'll figure something out there for sure. Something good for you.
Yes. If you're subscribed to the show on our audio channels, it'll get delivered right to you. At worst, we would have a re-release. But either way, what is this? What is the thing you say at the end of the episode?
I'm Batman.
I don't know. Same bat time, same bat place.